Welcome to episode 139 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I answer questions from the Sports Biz Slack community.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, doing heel raises while I'm doing this intro, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I am doing heel raises, trying to build up that calf strength. I'm standing here in the new Sports Geek offices, moved from South Yarra to Richmond, Lennox Street, Richmond. So if you're in the area, please let me know. At my standing desk, I've got the very desk, doing a little bit of doing the heel raises. Always got to make sure that the calves are strong. Don't want to do another Achilles that I did back in 2014. And my name is Sean Callinan. If you are listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome to the podcast. And this is going to be a bit of a different podcast. If you haven't listened before, there are 138 episodes that are more like this current format of interviewing someone. And thank you for those of you who have listened before and left a review. If you've listened before, you've left a review, right? I'm at 106 reviews worldwide on iTunes. If you could leave one, I'd much appreciate it. If you haven't, and I see you the next time and I talk about my podcast, I'd love to eyeball you and say, you've left an iTunes review, haven't you? So just go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. It's 2 minutes. Very much appreciate it. So this episode, I tapped into the very vibrant, the very compelling, a lot of chatting happening in the Sports Biz Slack community. It's a Slack community that I've set up around 15, 16 months ago. I'd have to check the dates. Pretty much saying, hey, if you work in sports biz and you want to talk about things and connect with like-minded individuals, or you just want to test out how Slack works because you might want to use it in your business, join. And if you haven't, you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. The only criteria is, do you work in sport? And are you not an idiot and not annoying? And that's been a pretty good rule so far. And so this week I jumped into the digital channel because we've got multiple channels in the Sports Biz Slack. We've got the digital channel. We've got new, brand new, spanking new channels. Thanks to John Spade from the Panthers who suggested the tech channel. And also Fiona Green from Winners over in the UK who suggested the data channel. So now we've got a data channel with all the CRM geeks and the data geeks talking away. We've got something for the geeks, the tech, talking about the tech in stadium, the tech around what sports teams need, security, all of that stuff. Let them geek out with the ones and the zeros and things like that. So if you're in those, if you're in that sphere, they're the channels. If you're in the digital space like I am, you can be in the digital channel. If you're in sponsorship, get into the sponsorship channel. That's how Slack works, people. So I jumped into the digital channel just because I thought that's where I'll get some good questions. And I said, hey, guys, I'm going to follow the model of the Ask Gary Vee show. You've heard me talk about Gary Vaynerchuk before. He's run a very successful podcast where he pretty much crowdsourced questions. He answered them and became a really good podcast. So I thought, why not? You have heard me use the phrase before, and this is a bit of a shout out to Meg and Jolie, who are keeping now track of phrases and things that I say so they can make pretty Instagram quotes. And one of the ones I love is steal with pride. Take someone else's great idea, great content, great campaign, twist it, make it yours, and wear it, own it. That's how the internet works. Steal with pride, people. If you see someone else do something great, either in the same sport, in a different sport, in the music industry, in retail, see it, look at it, figure out how you can twist it for your fans and steal with pride. So in this case, this episode, I'm going to steal with pride from Gary Vaynerchuk. So let's get into the show. So the questions, and I can't throw to anybody to ask the question. So I'm going to ask the question and answer the question. This is a tough format to do when you're only the one person. So Lenny Go from Tradable Bits, good friend and very active contributor to the Sports Biz Slack community, asks, which major league sports league will be the next to crack down on teams with a controversial social media policy? So what Lenny is obviously pointing to there is the recent change of tact in the NBA. NBA Twitter, as it's known, as a hashtag on the Twitter. The NBA teams have been very good at the banter, the backwards and forwards. You know, we've spoken to Dwayne Hankins previously, some famous banter with the LA Kings. He's now at the Blazers with guys like TJ Ansley. And the backwards and forwards that happens in the NBA world with a little bit of snark and a little bit of backwards and forwards. And the NBA came out with a policy, said, too much snark, let it go. We don't want to bring that bad look to the NBA. For mine, it's an overreaction, a big overreaction. Twitter's pretty disposable. It was something that Twitter did well, and it was Twitter's thing. We can't take too many things away from Twitter. It won't have many things left. Which league will be the next to crack down? Well, all the others already do. Is my counter to Lenny. I mean, the NBA has been very good and very open in its policy on what it lets teams do. And so most likely it's going to be more of the same, more of the brand protection kind of piece, which is a detriment to the fans and to the fun and takes a little bit of the social and the fun out of social. So Will it be a course correction? Will they sort of pull it back? Will it loosen? I think all they really did was they moved the line back a little bit. We saw the counter argument with a couple of teams being overly nice to each other, pretty much thumbing their nose at those things. So I think sane heads will prevail, especially in the NBA. I think there are bigger problems at play, both in multiple leagues and that they should be looking at than a bit of Twitter banter. So, unfortunately, political correctness rules in 2017. I think we're going to see more crackdowns. Most of the crackdowns are really around digital rights and TV coverage. So the ones, again, that make zero sense are the NFL banning teams being able to do their own GIFs. I find that more of an issue than the banter piece, because again, it's just a brand protection play. And as these sports and businesses get bigger and bigger, and more money starts flowing through the brand police and the people trying to protect that brand, will try to reduce anything that potentially causes issue. So unfortunately, Lenny, we are heading down the social media with an asterisk that has political correctness next to it. It can't be avoided. Chuck Hover, again, I will get all of these names wrong. Please let me know. If you are sending in further questions, please send me how to say it phonetically. I'll still muck it up, but at least you've tried. What would be three takeaways from your podcast guests that you think give rights holders the best chance for success with a marketing partner? So the first thing is, Chuck, I'm reading these questions and answering them now because that's what I do well. So I haven't gone back and done the research. I should have done that. That would have been the best way to do it. Guests. So if I was to say, which guests would I send people to? I'm going to twist your question a little bit. And this is what you get to do when you're answering the questions. Who would I send right holders to understand how to best get success? I think listening to the episode with Joe Gottfried at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment in the role that he has, I think that was a really good episode in understanding getting the partners to understand what you can offer from a digital point of view and sort of having that media sales background. So that's episode 125 as he quickly types away because I no longer remember all the spots. I think all of my chats with Russell Scabetti and probably I'll also throw in, not to bundle my data geeks into the same bundle, but I'm putting them in the same data set, Russell Scabetti and Fiona Green. I'm putting them into the same bucket of understanding your data. I think that's the key starting point for anything you want to do with a partner and a rights holder. So that would be the three places I would point people to. Understanding your data, so from a data CRM point of view, is really important, and you can get that from those CRM discussions I've had with people like Ross Scabetti, Charlie Shin from MLS episode 100, and Fiona Green talking about understanding the strategy behind your data. I reckon that's super important from a sponsorship point of view. And then, yeah, what Joe does in having a foot in both camps, a foot in the sponsorship camp and the sales camp, and a foot with the digital team, and sort of being that conduit, they would be the key ones. I think I've given three there. I think. Call me out on it, Chuck, if I haven't. Please let me know. Come back with another question. So Liam Bednarski, again, if I mispronounce all the names, that's because I'm terrible at names. And so his question is, having read the article you shared about Snapchat moving forward recently, what are your personal thoughts on where the platform is headed? So the article, which I'll put in the show notes, and note quickly to Meg putting the show notes together, it's on the Facebook page. I think I did it on the Sports Geek one, but it might be on the Sean Callanan page. So facebook.com/SeanCallananSpeaks. It was a really good article where they were analysing the Snap IPO document. And saying, where is Snap going? What are they trying to do? Are they a mobile play? Are they a hardware play with spectacles? And, you know, so that's the article that Liam's referencing. Good read. Go back and literally find it. It says, I think I actually used good read on Snap. So where is Snapchat going? It has to keep its level of innovation up. To a certain degree, it has to increase it. It's been super innovative in rolling out new features, rolling out search. Like search, I think, is killer. Like the ability for people to search for a player or a team and find them on Snapchat is super critical, right? That has been holding back mainstream growth. When I say mainstream growth, old people. People who don't get Snapchat, because they get on there and they go, I can't find anybody. What is this? This is terrible. So that potentially will open up the platform to more athletes and more celebrities and more influencers. Now, I know there's a whole stack that are already using it, but it'll open it up to more. And once the athletes figure out, oh, this is a really good way to connect with fans, it's less trolley, if that's a word, trolling. There's less trolls. No, I think it's less trolley. Than Twitter, you know, so you're hearing people like Serena Williams going, I love Snapchat because I get to say my stuff and my fans get it and I don't get the people complaining and she doesn't have to read the mentions. So I think Snap are moving like everybody is, and I think it's another question about other platforms. They're moving as a media platform and short-form media, and, you know, there'll be more shows developed. You've seen, you know, Saturday Night Live producing short digital shorts that are going on Snapchat. I think that's where it's going. That's very much how millennials are consuming, and how millennials and younger, because that's what we think about. It's not millennials, it's the next generation that are just digital. You know, they're born digitally. They're already over the platforms. That's how they'll be consuming it. So I think they've got to keep innovating because Facebook is chasing them down hard. You know, Messenger is doing it. Instagram Stories is killing it. They're putting in a Snapchat clone into WeChat. They are trying to cut them off at every pass, and they've got the audience there. So, yeah, Snapchat's got a lot ahead of them. I think they've done a good job so far. But, you know, if you go talk to Jack at Twitter, you can't rest and say we're doing okay. They've got to keep pushing and pushing down hard. So, yeah, so that's my take on the Snap, Liam. So I hope you enjoyed that. Jonathan Pummel, J Pummel 94, as he is known on Slack. So send him a message, tell him that you heard his question, that he's on the podcast. Jonathan asks, how does a team decide the balance of selling tickets for as much as they can possibly versus selling cheaper tickets in order to increase connection with the club, potentially leading to selling more merchandise in the future? So it's a great question. It's probably a better question for someone like Troy Kirby, who is a guest in the Tower of Sports. He's a ticketing guru. That's his day job when he's on podcasting. He's helping people sell tickets and helping them do that. But it is something that that I do in working with the membership teams and ticketing ticketing executives. It is a delicate balance. I'm always in favour of selling a full price ticket than selling giving away free tickets or papering the stadium, because as soon as you start selling and offering cheap tickets, you have the downside of starting to condition your fans to expect cheaper tickets. Those fans will never buy a full price ticket. So I think there is, you know, I don't think there is a balance, because you just don't sell the you don't discount. Discount is not a good strategy to get people in the door. And as far as your to increase connection to the club, to say that game day is the only way to increase connection, and again, not putting those words in your mouth, but I'm just pulling apart your question, Jonathan. You know, 10, 15 years ago, yes, game day was the only way to start increasing the connection with your club, but now you have so many digital channels that every single time a post goes out on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat, that's doing the job of increasing connection. So I would be looking more to how can I build out these audiences. Again, listen to the chat that I had with Dennis Hugh around what they're doing with the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors. How can I build out these audiences that have fans putting up their hands and identifying themselves as someone that wants to buy a ticket? And then it's a matter of sending them or presenting them, whether in an ad or an EDM, an offer that gets them that ticket. And the offer might be a special ticket offer, but it doesn't need to be a cheaper ticket. Everyone now wants experiences. So create a bay that's of certain type, and you get a T-shirt and you get an add-on and you bundle it up and they feel like they're getting more value. But for a $4 T-shirt, you're getting the fan in and they're playing a full ticket. And yes, you're wearing the cost of the T-shirt. You know, can you defray that with a sponsor? Those kind of things. You want to play that game, but you're not starting to condition the fan to go, okay, it's Friday. We know that they'll send out those tickets where I can get them half price. Why would I buy it earlier? And why would I be a member or season ticket holder? Because you keep putting cheap tickets in the market. It's a flawed strategy. Yes, you'll get a spike, but it's not a sustainable spike. And yeah, if you listen to Troy talking about ticketing, he will tell you the same thing. You know, if you've ever heard the phrase papering the stadium, that is making the stadium look full, but it's lots of free tickets. It's a really poor model to run a business on. Unfortunately, you know, too many sports do it, and it really makes it really tough, because someone gets a ticket for free and your next offer says buy a ticket, and they're like, but last time I bought it, I got it for free. So I always, you know, whether it's sports or whether it's events, I always joke when I see people saying, hey, our event's sold out, and their event is a free event. It's not sold out if it's a free event. It's full, but it's not sold out because you didn't sell any tickets. So, which reminds me, a perfect segue, have got an event coming up. If you are in Melbourne, we have, so part of Chunky Media. So Chunky Media is a new business that I've started with Steve Vallis. It allows me to do a lot of the stuff that I do in the sports industry outside of the world of sport. So currently we're working with a few startups, an office leasing business, an arts theatre, and an electronic retailer. So a few different businesses, but I'm doing the same stuff, slicing the data, marketing tech, understanding your data, understanding your content, how do you drive digital. So the pitch for Chunky is we pick up where traditional marketing stops, and we pick up the digital side and explain and help teams do that. Which leads me to the plug. We are running some events. So we're running some business networking events around marketing. They're going to be in Melbourne, and later in the year we're going to be running them in Sydney. So if you're listening to this in Melbourne, it's March 2. It's going to be at the NAB, National Australia Bank in Docklands. We've got the auditorium there. It seats 250 people, and I want to fill it. So if you're in Melbourne, you're listening to this, please come along. You can go to the Chunky Media website, chunky.media, And the prompt, follow the prompts, is to get the tickets or go to digitalbusinessevents.com.au. We've got the lead director, Faisal Kalel, director of digital sales at Optus, and Claire Smith, director of digital and customer marketing at Village Roadshow, and also Joe White, who is marketing for City of Melbourne. So I'm really looking forward to hosting that panel. I will record it. Potentially, pieces of it will probably come out on Chunky Channels. But if you're in Melbourne, March 2, please come along. I'd love to see you there if you're a listener, and to support the event. We really hope that it will be a success going forward. Okay, so the next question, back to regular programming. Look at that seamless ad integration. I mean, you didn't even hear a skip of a beat. So the next question is from Stefan Kollenberg. Stefan, was good to catch up with a SportsBiz Slack member when he was recently here for the Australian Open as part of Brizzy. His question is, what's your stance on social media platforms monetizing the fan content being created inside stadiums? It's extremely valuable to brands, and right now the team is being cut out of the equation. So this is a two-parter. There's two parts to this. That's what a two-parter means. So what's the stance on social media platforms monetizing? So the first question is, are we talking about the platforms themselves monetizing stadiums? So potentially, if we say one way, would be Twitter putting particular ads geofenced around particular events, or Snapchat putting embargoes and restrictions around big stadiums so people can't put they jack up the price to be putting filters on stadiums. That side, and I don't think that's your question, but I'm going to take your question in that direction, Stefan. I think if these partners, if they want to be, and you can do the same in Facebook, but I haven't seen Facebook restrict like a local awareness ad over a stadium. I think if these partners, if these platforms, the Twitters, the Snapchats, the Facebook, want to be partners of sports, they can't be then monetizing the sport without making the sport a partner. Can't say, hey, great, create all this great content. We want to make money off it, and we want to make money off your event. And so, and that's been the case for most of the platforms. We are seeing that tide turn a little bit with Twitter buying rights, TV rights, Snapchat buying rights, Facebook paying money to teams and leagues around Facebook Live. So the money flow is starting to come back. So that's the first one around the geo geo locking of stadiums. The second one, and I think the second one is about how the team's being cut out of the equation, is potentially the who has the right. Does the stadium have the right, or does the tenant, the team, have the right? I think that's the other conundrum. In Australia, and you know, Stefan would have seen that in Australia, a lot of the stadiums are built and owned by a separate organisation then, whether they be a trust or a private organisation that runs the stadium, and the team themselves have a specific, you know, are just a tenant. And so they don't have the rights to monetize the social, to roll out activations. Whereas if we went to Levi Stadium, where the San Francisco 49ers play, the group that owns the team owns the stadium, and there's a little bit, there's more flexibility in what they can do. So there's that conundrum, the legal one of who has the rights. Are they monetizing it correctly? You know, the team is in the best position to activate it and monetize it because it's their fans. They've got a great connection with the team, less so with the stadium. So I think it's something where I think there has to be a bit of give and take. If the stadium wants to be a good partner, then it should be sort of part of your tenant rights. And then the other part is, you know, what are you doing with the fans, you know, that are taking Instagram shots and tweeting and how can you amplify that, and how can you report that back to sponsors? And that's the piece Stefan's talking about, the guys at Brizzy are doing, you know, and being able to drive that action of take a selfie, you know, use our hashtag, tell fans to do this, creating FOMO. At the moment, most of that content is, yes, we want the fans to do it because it tells more, explains what the live experience is like, creates FOMO, they become brand ambassadors, and it actually drives more people to the game. But if you can also, on top of that, have the secondary benefit of having a happy sponsor because you're also getting that activity, you're getting double benefit. So the conundrum around platforms and stadiums taking those rights away from teams, that's one that if I was in that position as a tenant or as someone working, I would be fighting like crazy to get access to that. Because you're completely right, Stefan, it's extremely valuable to brands and it's very valuable to teams. So thank you very much for that, Stefan. Okay, who am I going to... I'm just scanning through the list. I don't think I'm going to get through the whole list, which is awesome, which means I'll do another Ask Sports Geek show and might roll this out. But it'll take your feedback on what works. Peter Thompson asked the very broad question, what makes a sport brand successful? Look, I'm going to put my hand up and say, look, I'm not a brand guy. I'm happy to have opinion on brand, but there are people with design backgrounds, brand backgrounds that can tell the whole brand story, and this is why we went with that shape, and this is this is what this projects, and all of that. I've never been in that space. I'm always happy to offer my opinion on a new brand or a new logo and those kind of things. It's not my skill set, but doesn't mean I can't answer the question. So to me, what makes it a great sports brand is that it matches the mission statement and the ethos and the culture of that team. So if I had to sort of do it in a team environment, it should speak to, you know, what you want that to do. So the easiest one is to go, oh, let's go to big, old, traditional logos and brands that have been out in the market and have a lot of history, and that history and success is just permeates that brand. So it might be like the Boston Celtics, that kind of thing. I think a really good discussion on this, sort of taking Chuck's advice, is the episode that I did with Michael Artis from 2020, who's a brand guy. And he talked about the process which Arsenal changed its logo to the Shield, and how they went about it. And again, dove into the history. I think those pieces, you have to, you know, a good brand sells a story. And you've got to be able to tell that story, and then you've got to be able to tell that story on multiple platforms in easy, you know, and it's got to be easy to consume, far easier to consume than it once was. So I think to me, that's what, if I've waffled on a bit, that's what a great sports brand is. You know, able to convey a story of success just in what you see. So I'm going to park the other one because Peter also asks, what are your top five sports logos? And I'm definitely going to give that one more thought. I think that one I might go back to the Sports Biz Slack and say, I can't answer that. Let's start asking. I'm going to be biased. I'm going to pick teams that I like and that I followed from, you know, my youth and things like that. But and I might, again, better people to ask. Go ask Adam Martin, who's in the from the Makers of Sport podcast. If you haven't listened to Makers of Sport, if you are in the brand and logo space, go listen to Adam. Adam will be able to rattle off five straight away. I'm going to outsource that question to Adam because he's a better person to ask. Fiona, who is now fired up Slack. Great to have you on board, Fiona. And it's good that Tyler, your son, finally told you Slack's really awesome. You should use it. So happy to have you here. FG winners, if you are looking for Fiona on SportsBiz Slack. If a right holder could only hire one person right now, would you recommend someone who knows content, distribution, or data? Well, the first answer is you hire the unicorn, the person that knows all of those things. And they are a unicorn because they pretty much don't exist. You could call me, but I am not accepting jobs. I'll happily consult with them. It is a tough ask, though. I would probably lean... It also depends on the goals of the rights holder and what their strengths or weaknesses are. Demands, what their goals are. If they want to have a great content piece, long form video series, or they want a podcast developed, or they want, medium style essay series, or they want short, they want a Snapchat show built, well, that says you want to lean into someone who's got great content skills that can come up with the cool ideas and execute. Distribution, I'm going to say distribution is either execution on different social, and I'm going to put ad execution in that space. Again, if they want specific, segmented, getting their message to certain people in a, dark post style, only the people they need to see it, then that's what you need. You need someone in the distribution ad product space that knows how to get that message shown on Facebook and knows how to get it seen on Instagram and knows if they want to put it on Twitter, that's how they do it. That's what you go for. And then the last one is if they don't know who they want and can't make a head or tail of the data they have, then obviously you need to start there. You lean into where the strengths lie or their weaknesses lie and fill that best gap and what the resources allow. So your follow-up questions would be, come on, Sean, pick one. Don't be sitting on the fence in the same style as I'd ask of my closing five questions. I would probably lean into data because data will tell us what platforms, what audiences, what ad products we should use, and data will inform what type of content and the form of content that we should develop. So if you're starting with equal footing, I would get the data person. And I'd say the data person is almost the hardest to find. The distribution, the person that understands all the ad products, as Jacob sort of outlined in the episode 137, where we talked about a lot of Facebook ad and technology, that tech is changing so fast. Again, depends on your goals. I'd probably start with data and then probably content, and then last piece is the ad piece and the distribution piece. So the next question is from I'm just checking the clock. I'm around at 30-odd minutes, so we might not get all of these through. So next one is from Pascal. I'm going to say Wadiax. And again, Pascal, I apologise if I have completely stuffed up your name. Your question is, some rights holders look at developing in parallel their shows and also practice of their sports. Practice zones, test zones, simulators, more and more are used by some around venues and in parallel as a complement to the event. What are your top examples of such initiatives? So, again, I may have misread the question. I'm treating this as what are top game day activations and experiential marketing that I'm seeing around stadiums. Again, that's my interpretation. Pascal, if I've got it wrong, please admonish me in the SportsBiz Slack community. I think for mine, I'm really lucky to travel and see a lot of different sports, both in, here in Australia and also over in Europe. It was really good to see what's happening in Europe and what they're doing. But, you know, the leading space is definitely the US. There's not many parts of stadiums that aren't activated in the US system. Also in the pro scene and then the college scene. But in the college scene, even the, you know, the tailgating areas and activations that are driven is a top notch. So I would be leaning towards the pro leagues. But I also would add one example that was in Australia, but it wasn't an Australian product. I was really impressed with what the UFC do around their stadiums, around events. They were here for the fight where Ronda Rousey got her head kicked in. I can't remember. Was it 173 maybe? I'm coming up with a number. It's a complete guess. I didn't go to the event, but I went to the day before and saw the weigh-ins and looked at all the different activations. What I did notice is they did an absolutely stellar job of collecting your data at every single event. You go and get your hands wrapped, get your data. You go and get a sign, you give your data. You go get a photo with a belt, you give them data. So that's a really top example. I think also, again, from an Australian example, and this one from an Australian organising body, the Australian Open. I think the Australian Open does a terrific job of activating the whole precinct. I'm hoping to catch up with some of the Tennis Australia people at South by Southwest and maybe talk to them on the podcast. I think what they've done in the event space is phenomenal, both with their sponsors and also just the placemaking activities that they've done to sort of set up different zones for different people, for different demographics. I think they've done an absolutely remarkable job. So if you haven't, you know, jump onto Oz Open and check out some of their socials or look at Instagram and what some of the photos that were coming out from the Oz Open to see some of the activation. I can't talk about rights holders and activations, and I haven't used the buzzword fan engagement. If you want more top examples, go follow Blair Hughes, Mr. Blair Hughes, who's in the Sportsby Slack, but go to Blair Hughes, his Twitter. He takes photos everywhere he goes. He was recently at the Houston Super Bowl. So more of those, check out what he's sharing. He's got a Pinterest board with, I think, 4,500 examples of fan engagement. Plenty of top ones in there. So check out those. Ben Reed asks, what is the highest ROI you are seeing for sports teams investing in digital and social media marketing? I mean, I love the question. It's where do I put the, you know, do I come up with a small example? Do I put up with a big example? So I don't know if I can, you know, I think, listen to some of the stuff that Dennis talked about in the knowledge that he dropped around the Warriors, around some of the returns that they're getting from the Facebook ads for the ticketing and merch. I think they're doing, you know, Dennis sends through his numbers every now and again, and he's getting some really good numbers to, you know, one, amplify the content, but then also build audiences and get results. I haven't got the X number. And I think it is, you know, also on a campaign by campaign basis. So we're having a lot of success getting about 5 or 6X return on merchandise campaigns, firing up fans, certain segments. Here's the products we want to move. Here's $200 and, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 return for that $250. And I'm like, if someone tells me that I would be spending that money every single week. And so then we just set up a system every week, home game, we run this campaign, away game, we run this campaign, you know, go from that. So I think that's the thing. I think from a campaign point of view, I was really pleased with, and I think I've gone through the Asian Cup example. And the easiest thing with ROI is you can say, well, this part of the campaign did really well. And so the good story is, well, I can say in December we spent $16,000 on trying to sell tickets via web conversions to the Asian Cup, and it resulted in $116,000 of ticket sales. You're like, cool, bonus, $16,000 to $116,000, awesome. It's even better if we do it in the last week and sold more tickets to the final. So we spent like $500, and it resulted in, again, I'm rolling that, I can't remember the number. But so they're great numbers, right? And they're great for examples. But that doesn't happen if we don't do the 9 months, I think it was about 40K, of audience building, awareness building, ads that make that December happen. So you've got to put money into the awareness piece and the several touch points to be able to do the sell. So if I go and do, if I go and use Gary Vaynerchuk as an example, his previous book, The Jab, 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 Right Hook. Jab is the, you know, giving stuff, giving, 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 giving. And that can still be done as an ad campaign, telling people about it, telling people how cheap it is, telling people when the game is on, spending to do that. We did all that with Asian Cup, getting people excited, rallying them there, getting people engaged. We did a bit of that, and that was jab, jab, jab. And then December came, right hook time, buy a ticket, whack. But if we just turned up in December and said buy a ticket without all those jabs, wouldn't have worked. Would not have worked at all. So Ben's gone, he's tripled down. Ben's following up, Ben Reed is following up with a second question. I don't know if this is going to be allowed going forward, but I'm going to go into it anyway, and I've looked at the time, I'm going to try to race through these. What do you think is the future of sporting team engagement with messaging apps like Facebook, WhatsApp, WeChat? I think it's going to be bots. I don't think people are going to be sitting there going, I'm going to answer messages, because it's just not scalable. But more and more teams will have bots, whether it is, where should I park? Tell me. Can I get a ticket? Here's a link. Who's the starting lineup? Here it is. What's the score? Here it is. That stuff in the next 18 months will be just everywhere. And quite surprising, the NFL had a messenger bot that was sending out, hey, here's the latest updates, and they turned it off. But it was just sending out, here's the latest five articles. So it has to be smart. It can't be too dumb, says the guy that's got a Sports Geek messenger app that sends you a message every time a podcast goes out. But, hey, ask it a question. Swear at it. Swear at the Sports Geek messenger app. See what happens. Ask it about dancing. See what happens. A few Easter eggs in there for you. But, yeah, I think bots. And the bots will get smarter. The AI will get smarter. So I think that's the key. Last question, Ben. You've had enough. It's now a busy market, but what are the data analytics and insights areas for sporting teams that you still feel are untapped? It depends on where you say they are untapped. In certain parts of the world, they aren't untapped. They are getting tapped like crazy. So that's, again, all of my friends in the CRM community around SEAT, they're already doing that, making sure people are hitting the database, understanding that, those kind of things. They're already killing that space. I think potentially things like social being integrated with CRM is still maturing, still trying to figure it out. And that space, I think there's still development there, but I think the main question is, when will that be an accepted practice in most sports teams, right? So some teams will have a whole bunch of business analysts that are checking the data, are seeing where the next list is, who should get an EDM, setting up that workflow, right? And that they're the leaders, and then there's others that are on that journey. Again, if you go back to the Russell Scabetti, Fiona Greens, everyone's got a CRM project. It's just a matter of where they're up to. And CRM projects will only work when someone can go into the data and make sense of it. So it's still relatively untapped, but there are people that are killing it. John McCauley, who's a rogue, because he did not leave this question on the thread. There's threaded comments in Slack now, people. Threaded comments. Come on, John. I know you can do it. He asks, what's the most important aspect to driving sponsorship dollars? Scale, integration, storytelling, other. I love multi-choice. I love your question, even though you didn't provide in a thread, John. I love it. The most important aspect to driving sponsorship, I'm going to go other. I'm going to go knowing what the sponsor wants, because it's very easy to say, hello, sponsor, here are all the widgets we have to sell, when really you need to actually listen. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people in sponsorship sales that don't listen. You need to listen to find out, oh, what do you want? Oh, we want brand awareness and association with the brand. Okay, then that can be done with storytelling. That can be done with scale. That can be done with integration. But we need to know what you want. Because there's nothing worse to go, oh, I want people to come into my store. Cool, we'll tell everybody about your store. But we didn't drive anybody. Or I want more sales leads. And all you're doing is doing a nice video piece with their logo in the corner. That's like, that's not going to get the result. So the most important aspect is matching the sponsor goal to the different opportunities that you've got. You know, so you will have brand awareness type campaigns. You will have things that drive sales leads. You will have things, abilities. And it's not all digital. It might be activation and things like that that digital can enhance and be a partner of that work. So, it's matching those two is for mine. And the last one from another, and it's great. I absolutely love that in this podcast we've had Fiona, John, and also Micah have all been guests on the podcasts. So Micah, who was at the Atlanta Hawks, do you foresee a future where teams bypass traditional media outlets and broadcast their games directly from their owned channels? So let's just, I guess the bigger question is, what do you mean by owned channels? Because the future is already here, Micah, my friend. There are already teams broadcasting on their own channels, such as Facebook Live, those kind of things. There's been people doing it on YouTube for a long while. I was talking to Greg Oakford from Golf Geek. They did they broadcast the Victoria Open at both via both YouTube and Facebook Live, and got some killer numbers. The second part of the question is, do they own those channels? Yeah, that's a longer debate. That's not for a time when I've already passed the 40-plus minute mark for a podcast. So, one, the answer is I do see a future. The second thing is, I think it was this week or maybe last week, Facebook is pivoting to TV. It's going to have a TV app on the Apple TV soon. That's going to just make it so easy. Now, all they've got to do is make it better than the Twitter one so you can actually find what you want. Is it going to be like Netflix where you click through and, oh, there's all the properties we've got? Oh, yeah, I can watch that. Man, is it going to be a way to consume all the video? Is it just going to be live? Who knows? But that's the natural pivot. Facebook goes there, Twitter goes there, Snapchat goes there. And then it'll be a matter of eyeballs. Who's got the eyeballs? The one with the most eyeballs wins. And teams that can't get traditional media are already going there. You know, when will big, I think the bigger thing is when will the ability for a team to make money on its own channel? And if I don't call Facebook its own channel, I'd already say the future's here. The WWE, which sport, entertainment, I sort of counted in the same category. Like, it took them 9 months to get 1 million subscribers to make their channel profitable. And it's very easy to know that the MLB are watching that, NHL are watching that, the NBA are watching that. That's where they want to go. It's much easier to own your own channel. So definitely in the future. Definitely in the future. So that's it. Thank you very much to Lenny, Chuck, Liam, Jonathan, Stefan, Peter, Fiona, Pascal, Ben, John, and Micah. Thank you for contributing to the Sports Geek Ask a Sports Geek show. If you've got a question for this podcast, you've got to be in the Sports Biz Slack community. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. sign up. We are at nearly 750 people signed up in the community as I record this. Let's get to 1,000. Send sportsgeekhq.com/slack to some colleagues. The more, the merrier. Digital channel, data channel, tech channel, stadium channel, sponsorship channel. We've got channels for everyone. I feel like Oprah at the minute. I want to see you in there. I want to see you in there. That'll be terrific. Couple of things, a bit of housekeeping. I am on the road. I'm heading to South by Southwest. I'm leaving Australia on the 5th. I'm heading to Detroit to catch up with the Red Wings and the Tigers and see the Pistons and Bulls in action at the Palace. I'm looking to catch up with Mike and the team there at the Pistons, Mike Donay. Hopefully do a podcast and catch up with Zach at Wait Time. So I'll be in Detroit. Then I'm going to Minneapolis to catch up with Todd Kaflisch, a former guest, and also Todd Kaflisch at the Vikings, and hopefully Scott Kegley will be in town to catch up with them, and also Ted Johnson and the Timberwolves, so the Vikings Timberwolves, and also John Averson at the Minnesota Twins. So looking forward to catching up with all the mini teams. And then I'm heading to South by Southwest. If you are heading to South by Southwest, please join our Sports Biz Slack. We've got a South by Southwest channel where we are connecting. We're definitely going to have a meetup. We will be sharing photos in the Slack just to make you all jealous, get a bit of FOMO. So I'm going to South by Southwest, and then after South by, I'm going to San Antonio to see the Spurs Blazers and catch up with the guys at the Spurs and wrap up the trip with a couple of days in LA, hoping to go to a Kings game, a Lakers game, and finish the trip with, I think, Clippers play the Cavs. So that's where I'll be. I'll be on the move. As you know, if you followed me before when I'm traveling, I tweet more. My Instagram blows up, and it potentially gets very loose. The Instagrams from South by Southwest will be very good. I'm going to try to do podcasts on the way. I might do some more Facebook Live video. I don't know. I'm going to play by ear, but the idea is to get as many interviews as I can, catch up with some cool people, hopefully catch up with former guests and good friends like Dwayne Hankins at South by Southwest, and also hopefully run into episode 62 guest Mark Cuban is going to be there, so hopefully I can catch up with Mark as well. So please follow along, send me a tweet, send me a message on Slack. Sean Callanan is my name, and it's my handle on most platforms. And you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.